This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Technology in newer cars is making them safer to drive all the time. Highway fatalities are going down, even as other technologies like cell phones seem to be making us less safe on the roads. So there's a question. Is it actually getting safer to drive? The raw numbers are still pretty shocking. In 2010, motor vehicle traffic-related injuries resulted in more than 33,000 deaths nationwide, accounting for more than 18% of all injury deaths. And car crashes are the leading cause of death for teenagers. Today, where we live, our driving habits, our driving laws, and the safety of our roads. Will more laws and better enforcement cut down on distracted driving? And are we actually doing better at preventing car crashes over the busy holiday periods? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Again, our phone number is 860-275-7266. You can email us where we live at WNPR.org. You can tweet us at where we live and also join us on our website, WNPR.org. We're going to start with a topic that makes many wonder every day. What can parents do to make their kids safer in the car? Again, we want to hear from parents and teenagers if you're home from school today. 860-275-7266. Our first guest is Dr. Brendan Campbell. He's medical director of the Pediatric Trauma and Injury Prevention Center at Connecticut Children's Medical Center. He joins us in our studio today. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
When we say that motor vehicle accidents are the leading cause of death amongst teenagers, that's shocking to a lot of people. Maybe you can flesh out those numbers a little bit for us.
Well, I think it really shouldn't be shocking. There's a lot of exposure that teenagers and adults, for that matter, have to driving motor vehicles. So, you know, you oftentimes will see that cancer and infection gets a lot of the press attention for causing the unexpected and premature deaths of children. But it's motor vehicle crashes, which are the leading cause of death for teenagers.
In your job, talk about how important it is for you to work on both the medical side, treating people once they come in with trauma, but then also on the prevention side, the idea that your job would be made a lot easier and a lot more kids would be a lot safer if indeed we could keep them from coming to the emergency room in the first place.
Right. I think it's very important to recognize up front that motor vehicle injuries and deaths are not accidents. They're both predictable and preventable. And we view our role at Connecticut Children's as a pediatric level one trauma center, as prevention being really the primary role, because we would much rather prevent injuries from happening than take care of injured teenagers after they've been involved in a motor vehicle crash.
Well, what are the main factors that you look into? What are the things that lead to so many fatalities, so many accidents amongst teens?
All right. And this gets back to the whole predictable and preventable thing. We certainly know what causes them. Teenagers are prone to risk-taking behavior. Their brain is not fully developed. That's certainly one part of it. And then there's just the common sense things that most people don't even really think about, the importance of wearing a seatbelt, the importance of not using alcohol when you drive a motor vehicle. But specifically focusing on teenagers, it's really important as parents that we take an active role in supervising our children as they become drivers, because first and foremost, you want to be a good role model to your children because they're going to learn from your behavior. And, you know, you can't just assume that there's going to be a risk of being involved in a crash as a teenager. There are things that you can do as a parent to lessen that risk.
Well, I want to ask what some of those things are, and we're going to get some phone calls from our listeners in a moment at 860-275-7266. But I want to jump back to something you just said about brain science. It's something we've talked about on the program before, and I think it's important to note. We allow kids in America to start driving at the age of 16. We let them vote at 18. We let them drink at 21. But almost every piece of research I've ever seen says that until you're about 24 or 25, you don't really have the fully functioning brain of an adult. And this is something that we probably need to take a little bit more seriously.
Right. So the part of the brain that allows judgment and restraint is not fully developed until you're in the mid-20s. You know, the best illustration of that translation of research into practice is if you look at the car rental companies. You can't rent a car until you're 25 years of age. So we allow teenagers to drive a motor vehicle before their brain is fully developed. You know, you add to that the challenges of distracted driving and alcohol and inexperience, and it can unfortunately be a lethal combination sometimes.
It's interesting that the very successful car rental companies that make an awful lot of money have figured out through various algorithms that indeed 25 is about the year that you probably should start renting their cars. They've figured that out, but seemingly the rest of us haven't.
We sure haven't, but I mean that's the best illustration, and people get that.
I want to bring in our next guest, Sherry Chapman, who's co-founder and president of the organization Morning Parents Act. She lost her son Ryan in a motor vehicle accident more than 11 years ago. She joins us by phone today. Sherry, welcome to our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me.
I'm wondering if you can start off by telling us who your son was and a little bit about him.
My son, Ryan, is my only son, the younger of my two children. He was a special birthday gift born on my birthday. It's hard to describe a life in a nutshell, but he was a loyal kid, adventurous. He liked to explore new places. He was very patriotic and funny and happy and forward-thinking. He had plans for a wife and three children. All of that is gone now. He was one of two passengers in a vehicle driven by another teen that crashed in Hebron, Connecticut in December of 2002. Ryan fought very hard to live, but his injuries were not survivable, and he died at Hartford Hospital. The driver and the other passenger suffered minor injuries.
Mm. I'm so sorry to hear your story, but I think it's probably so important for so many parents to hear. I'm assuming, Sherry, that it's not been easy to tell Ryan's story, but it's obviously been important to you to speak out to other parents.
Yes. Well, following Ryan's death, I had to learn how to live again. How do you live with such a significant part of you gone? I didn't eat because Ryan couldn't. I turned my back on anything that might give me pleasure because Ryan could no longer experience the things that he enjoyed. But eventually I realized that I could carry Ryan into the future, even though he couldn't do it for himself, and at the same time help others to avoid similar tragedies.
So what is the message that you're trying to spread? What is it that you tell people when you talk about Ryan's story and when you talk to parents and students?
Well, following Ryan's death, I, along with two other moms who lost teenage sons in separate car crashes within 10 days of the crash that took Ryan's life, formed the nonprofit organization Morning Parents Act, and that's we're also known as IMPACT. So our mission is to eliminate tragedies caused by inexperienced drivers through awareness, education, and legislation. So what we do is we've done a number of things. We've been involved with policy making and awareness programs, but we also have a Drive for Tomorrow program that we offer for free primarily to high schools, but also through hospitals and driving schools, in which members share their personal stories, including photos and videos of young lives lost, and then we discuss the shocking statistics, factors, what happens to the body in a crash, what the state's doing to protect teens, and what teens can do to protect themselves and their friends. So we're very personal. We share, we don't preach, and by the end of our Drive for Tomorrow program, anyone in that audience does not want to die in the manner in which our family members were killed.
Dr. Campbell, I want to bring you back into the conversation. And again, you can join us at 860-275-7266. We'd love to hear from some parents who are maybe thinking about what they can do to make their kids a little safer as they drive. Maybe if you're a teenager yourself, you're home from school today, you can give us a call at 860-275-7266. Sherry's talking about some of the message that she's trying to spread. What are some other things that you would like to say, Doctor, to parents, to teenagers, to maybe make them think a little bit more safely as they get behind the wheel?
Sure. The most important thing parents, I would like parents to recognize is that car crashes are preventable, and there are a couple of ways that you can make lessen the risk that your children will be involved in a car crash and be injured. You know, first and foremost, the one thing that we know lowers the risk of car crashes is the graduated driver licensing laws in our state. Connecticut has very strong and effective graduated driver's licensing laws. So as a parent, you need to understand those laws and enforce them. One of the things that we've seen over and over again in the last couple of years is the deaths that are occurring in teens on Connecticut's roads are teenagers who are violating the graduated driver licensing laws, whether it's the curfew overnight, passenger restrictions, whatever. You know, there are these violations, and the reason these crashes are occurring are because of those things. Secondly, as a parent, you need to take an active role in the learning process when your child is learning to drive. The first 18 months that your child is behind the wheel is critical. They're gaining important skills and figuring out how to drive a car safely. And if you're not in the car with them, paying attention to what they're doing, making sure that they get experience at night during inclement weather conditions, they're not going to be as safe a driver. And then lastly, I think you really have to, be strict with your children and have a zero tolerance policy for operating your cell phone behind the wheel, not wearing your seatbelt, and violating the graduated driver licensing laws.
Sherry, this idea of zero tolerance is something that gets talked an awful lot about with kids in school and in society. Could you maybe talk about that a little bit? Because obviously parents want their kids to be as safe as possible, but then there's this other barrier in which you want your kids to learn how to be independent. You don't want to invade kids' privacy. From your perspective, how do you address this issue of zero tolerance for things like driving, with a cell phone, driving with too many kids in the car? What do you say to parents?
Well, I think it's an easy argument to make once parents are informed of the risks. The biggest issue that we combat is educating parents and raising awareness of the issue, because many parents are not even aware that teen driving deaths are the leading cause of deaths for teenagers in Connecticut. So I think once they are aware of the risks, they're willing to discuss that with their teens. And once the teens themselves are aware of the risks, they're more willing to abide by the graduated licensing laws.
I want to go to the phones. You can join us at 860-275-7266 as we talk about safety on the roads. Taylor is calling from Watertown. Hi, Taylor. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hey, my dad's actually working on an app right now. What it does is it's called Cell Sentry, CellSentry, and it uses the technology in your phone, so when it senses you're going over 10 miles an hour, it actually overrides the call and text functions on your phone, so no messages can go through. But as a parent, you can set a whitelist number, so your number can still go through if you have to reach them when they're driving, but it completely blocks out all texts and calls, and then when you finally stop and when the app turns off, you can go back to calling. So it will significantly eliminate chances of kids texting and driving and calling behind the wheel.
Wow, so this is an app that's in development right now, or is
it's already available on the Android, that system, and then I believe it was supposed to be out today on iTunes. I could double check for you. I should have called them right before I called you guys.
No, I'm glad you will actually check. So say the name of the app one more time, if you would.
It's Cell Sentry, CellSentry.
So, Taylor, you say your dad is doing this. Do you mind me asking, is he doing this at all because of any experiences that he had with you behind the wheel?
No, sir.
No? This is something that, and before I let you go, this is something that's, I think, really, really interesting, and it's one of these technological barriers that I think a lot of parents are thinking about. Could you just chime in real quick, Taylor, on this whole idea about parents wanting to be as safe as possible with their kids, but then also having to understand that kids want their independence? They want to be able to come and go as they please. I mean, how does that work for you growing up?
My parents gave me a decent amount of freedom, but it's always been the constant understanding that no phone behind the wheel. And had that ever been an issue, I would lose all rights to driving. So I feel like parents should be very involved in some regards, but they shouldn't hinder their child's ability to get out there and learn.
Taylor, thank you so much for your phone call. I really appreciate that. And what we'll do is we'll put up some more information about this device on our website, WNPR.org. Thanks again.
Thank you.
One of the things I actually wanted to ask about was this story from over the summertime. A Glastonbury teenager was killed while driving intoxicated, and two friends were actually charged at the time for essentially letting her drive while intoxicated. I'm wondering, Doctor, if you can talk that through, if you think that there are more legal avenues that the state might need to take in order to solve some of these problems, whether or not it just has to do with parental responsibility or new apps for phones, or whether or not the law has to actually take into account penalties for kids who aren't following some of the rules they should.
Right. I think that's a great question and an important issue. But I think the perhaps the most important thing that I can emphasize is we know that graduated driver licensing laws work. The stronger they are, the more effective they are, and we've demonstrated from a public health perspective that they work. What's extraordinary about their effectiveness is that they work with minimal enforcement. So the police really do not spend a whole lot of time enforcing these laws. So one of the things that we're actively interested in from both a research and a public policy perspective is coming up with ways that make it easier for the police to enforce these laws. And I'll just give you one quick specific example. New Jersey puts a sticker on cars that identifies novice teen drivers. We talked about this possibility when I was a member of Governor Rell's task force on teen driving a couple of years ago, and we decided not to move it forward. But I think we're coming to a time where one of the challenges that police have is they're not able to identify novice drivers behind the wheel. And this sticker, magnet, whatever it would be one potential way for them to do that without being accused of profiling, which sometimes comes up.
Hey, Sherry Chapman, quickly before I let you go, do you have any thoughts about that or any other legal changes that you think might be appropriate to help curb teen deaths on the roads?
Well, I would like to see some of the graduated licensing provisions extended to older teenagers, 18, 19-year-olds. I'm also very interested in the possibility of a sticker program. There are sticker programs that have been adopted by other countries. So we're exploring the feasibility of that.
One last thing, Sherry. I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you if they have any questions or thoughts about the work that you do with Morning Parents Act. Can you just give them a little bit of information?
Sure. We can be reached through our website, which is morningparentsact.org, and I hope maybe you'll be able to post that online. And if someone wants to reach out to me personally, they can. My name is Sherry Chapman, and I can be reached at area code 860-209-7070.
And Sherry, we will be putting that information on our website as well, and that'll be a resource moving forward if people want to find that information at WNPR.org. Sherry Chapman, co-founder and president of the organization Morning Parents Act. Thank you so much for your time and for your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, John.
Before we go, let's listen to the winning entry in the Connecticut Department of Motor Vehicles Teen Safe Driving Video Contest from last year. This came from the Arts at the Capitol Theater High School in Willimantic. The theme of this year's contest was Put the Brakes on Distracted Driving. That's what we'll be talking about next. You can join the conversation about smartphones and cars, 860-275-7266, or you can tweet us at Where We Live.
Gotta drive safely. Are you in? Head-on crash with a car. Would you win? Nah, I don't think so. Strap in. When behind the wheel, you should obey the law. But if you don't obey, you ain't gonna drive at all. And if you get a ticket for something the police saw, are you in?
This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about safe driving and how to prevent unsafe driving. Our guest is Dr. Brendan Campbell. He's the director of pediatric trauma and injury prevention at Connecticut Children's Medical Center. You can join us at 860-275-7266. We want to turn our attention to distracted driving now. The U.S. Department of Transportation says more than 3,300 people died in distracted driving crashes in 2012. Many states, including Connecticut, are trying to curb this problem by introducing legislation. We'll hear from a legislator coming up in just a moment. Now, New York State is cracking down on distracted driving. Officers like Clayton Howell are driving in new unmarked SUVs.
You can see down into the car. So, you know, it's a bird's eye view as opposed to being at the same level.
And that was from an NPR story that aired last month. You can find a link to it on our website, WNPR.org. I want to welcome in Trooper Melissa McMorris, who's Public Information Officer with the New York State Police, to talk to us a bit about what New York is doing. Trooper, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well. Maybe you can talk a little bit broadly about what New York is trying to do to crack down on distracted driving.
Well, being that every 30 seconds a collision involving distracted driving occurs, we're utilizing innovative techniques to enforce and hopefully get rid of the epidemic of distracted driving. In 2013, specifically in July, the governor's office announced a campaign that's designed to reduce the number of auto accidents and tragic deaths that are caused every year by distracted driving. And there's so many facets to distracted driving. It's basically any activity that divides the driver's attention away from the primary task of operating a motor vehicle. It could be manual, such as taking your hands off the wheel, visual, you're taking your eyes off the road when you text or use your phone, or cognitive, you're taking your mind off the road. It's all very dangerous. And an operator that is texting while driving is 23 times more likely to be involved in a collision. They're most like, you know, they're fully preventable collisions. If you had just left your phone down, it wouldn't have happened.
You said earlier that every 30 seconds a distracted driving accident happens. Is that in New York State or nationwide?
I'm not sure if that comes from nationwide or not. I get most of my material from New York State websites, so that could be the case. We have distraction.gov, which is a U.S. government site that has a lot of useful information if there's parents that are looking to convey the message to their teens. In New York, we've increased fines that are associated with distracted driving, increase the amount of points that can go on your license for distracted driving. We're using different kinds of tools to try to eradicate it, such as our concealed identity traffic enforcement vehicles or our site vehicles. Those are the vehicles that Trooper Howell spoke of. They're the unmarked Chevy Tahoes. They have been in use since 2010. They come in a variety of colors, so it's not like your typical New York State Police vehicle, which is the dark blue color. We have a tan one. We have a couple different color ones. So when these vehicles are sitting roadside, you may think it's just any other motorist, when in fact it is actually a police vehicle.
And so in these slightly higher up vehicles, you're looking down into cars, and you're looking for what? People who are actually texting while driving, or people who are eating food while driving? I mean, what's the barrier for a New York State trooper to say, now's the time to pull somebody over?
We basically look for people that are texting while driving. If somebody, it's usually visible, they usually have the phone in one hand and you can see their thumb moving back and forth. The site vehicles, they were kind of presented as if they were a higher vehicle, when in fact they're just higher than the sedan model of our patrol interceptors. It's a, you know, an SUV, so it's higher and it's easier to see in sedans and possibly some SUVs as well.
But it's not, yeah, but there's a lot of SUVs on the road. One of the things in that NPR story that seemed to be an issue was just how difficult it is to pull people over and to change people's behaviors. Clearly, you're using these new techniques and you've raised the amount of fines, you've increased the number of points. Do you think that you're having an impact, given the fact that it is kind of difficult to catch all the people who are doing things they shouldn't be doing while driving?
I would hope that we'd have some kind of impact. However, you know, people just need to put down the phones. I mean, we can't change everything. As you know, that driving while intoxicated has been illegal since, you know, the 80s, and we still make arrests on driving while intoxicated. I think people may think that they're just not going to be caught. And we're a limited number of people. We can't catch everybody. But if we can sway that one person that we do catch to maybe not do that again, then it is a small success for us.
Now, is New York also going into the world of texting zones, places to pull over to the side of the road and actually send that text?
The governor's office has announced and unveiled texting sites throughout the state, yes.
So essentially that means if you get a phone call and you want to reply to someone, there's a place for you to pull over to the side of the road, make that phone call or make that text, and not have to worry about doing it while driving.
Yes.
Trooper Melissa McMorris is Public Information Officer with the New York State Police. Thank you so much for updating us on what's happening in the Empire State. We appreciate your time.
No problem. I just hope that everybody just, you know, there's certain steps that you could take to lessen the temptation. Turn off your ringer. You know, there's apps that you can download on smartphones. That's especially important for, you know, mothers who have teenage drivers, such as myself. You know, there's things you can do. There's things you can do to stop this. And if we can save one person, then it's a small victory.
Thank you so much, Trooper. I appreciate your time.
Thanks. You too.
I want to go to the phones here, 860-275-7266. Adam is calling from Haddam. Hello, Adam. You're on Where We Live.
Good morning. I believe that the carriers that provide the cell service have more than enough capability of identifying when a cell is moving more than a certain miles per hour. When that cell is moving more than, or a cell phone is moving more than a certain mile per hour, that they can actually cut off the texting feature of the phone. It could be done automatically. I'm waiting for the first lawsuit that comes around because of this. They have the capacity to do this, and I do not understand why they haven't enacted. People are going to, you know, say, well, it's my right. But it's more right to live than it is to be able to text on your cell. They also have the capability of doing it for Bluetooth. If your phone is not active on a Bluetooth device, you can't call or receive phone calls. They have this software capability and programming capability, and for the life of me, I do not know why it hasn't been put in place.
Adam, first of all, thank you very much for the phone call. And Doctor, given what we'd heard earlier from the app developer, someone trying to essentially give something for parents to opt in and say, I want to keep my kids safer. What Adam seems to be talking about is, well, let's talk to cell providers. Do you think that this movement toward curbing distracted driving accidents is something that maybe in your mind needs to go to another level beyond where it is?
Well, I think theoretically having an app having the cell phone providers disable phones when they're moving, you know, theoretically that makes good sense. But I think in practicality that would be pretty difficult to enforce. But, I think what the message that you really have to get across with, you know, whether you're using a hands-free cell phone or a cell phone or texting, whatever, anything behind the wheel is dangerous. There's a concept that people may not have heard about, but they'll immediately recognize, something called cognitive blindness. When you're operating a cell phone or talking on the cell phone, you'll go from point A to point B and have no recollection of the event. And that just illustrates the danger of operating a cell phone while you're driving a car.
Now, many states, including Connecticut, are trying to curb the problem of distracted driving by introducing legislation. But some say it could be more of a short-term fix. Scott Adams is an economics professor at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. He looked at what happens after states pass distracted driving laws. Here's what he told NPR last month.
What we saw was that there was an initial decline in accidents once texting bans were passed. That was quite substantial. But after a few months, there was no effect.
I want to bring in now State Representative Fred Camillo. He represents Greenwich. He served on the Distracted Driving Prevention Task Force. He joins us by phone today. Representative, thank you so much for joining us here on Where We Live.
Good morning. Good to be here.
I'm wondering, first of all, if you can talk about the legislation that you've worked on and what you think it will accomplish.
Well, certainly. Myself, Representative David Scribner, who is the ranking member of the Transportation Committee, along with Representative Guerrero, the chairman, introduced a bill that had three components. It basically, in the short term, doubled all the fines. Second component was to cut, which is the more expensive long-term version of it, which does the following. It will allow the law enforcement to contact your insurance companies. And as you know, that can be that can be quite expensive. I believe you just had the trooper on from New York, and in New York, they have it's 5 points, which is significantly more than even in Connecticut. So we are looking at that also to make it even more of a deterrent. And the third component was the establishment of a task force, which we will be completing on the 7th and then issuing a report to the General Assembly and the governor.
Now, we just heard from this economist in Milwaukee who says, look, laws like this will help for a while, but after the initial burst of publicity, they tend not to work. How do you respond to that, and how do you write a law that has longer-term impact as opposed to just, you know, the first couple months or year?
Certainly. There's nothing that's going to be foolproof. As someone mentioned before, you're still driving while intoxicated. It's been illegal for a long time. We're still pulling people over. However, I know when I was a teenager, I used to see people all the time riding around drinking with an open container of beer. I really don't see that anymore. So we have changed the culture a lot on that. But you're never going to have 100% adhering to it. That's in anything. The gentleman from Haddam who called in and asked about the cell phone company capability of turning the phone off. And that's a great idea in theory. However, if I'm driving the car and I need to text and I give it to my wife and or my girlfriend or whoever's in the car with me, they can text it. Under that circumstance, it would be shut off, and the person driving would not be distracted. So it's not as easy. It's a very complicated issue, but we really do have to change the culture. And I think by establishing these, really significant fines and enforcing them. And it's as the trooper said, it's hard to even if you have these high visibility SUVs that are looking in, seeing who's texting, it's still very hard. You can't pull somebody over and subpoena their phone just for pulling them over. They only do that for major accidents and unfortunately where there are fatalities. And as we saw last year in New Canaan, somebody was a young girl was on the internet while driving, and she ran over a jogger and killed him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in that case, it was subpoenaed, and they found out what she was doing. But I asked in our task force, I asked some law enforcement personnel that were testifying if they ever can just ask to look at the phone or subpoena, and they said that would be impractical. So it is very, very hard to catch everybody. But having these significant penalties out there will start to sink in, I'm sure of that.
If you want to join us, 860-275-7266, we're talking about safety on the roads today. Kids and driving, distracted driving as well. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to be finding out whether or not our roads are actually safer during these very busy holiday periods. Again, you can join us 860-275-7266 or tweet us at Where We Live. Let's go to Helen, who is calling from Norwich. Hi there, Helen. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this show. This is so important. I just wanted to mention that I'm the mom of a 16-year-old who just got his license, and we've been using the tips in a book that I heard about on NPR called it's by Tim Hollister called Not So Fast, How to Parent Your Teen Driver, I think. And one of the things that he suggests is having very short solo trips for them at first once they actually get the real driver's license. And my short story is just that I had a car in the shop the other week. I needed to go pick it up. I took my teen driver with me to go get that other car and then run some other errands. That gave me the ability to observe how he drove the other vehicle, both, him following me and me following him. And I think that that's a great way to have kids when they're legally able to do their first solo trips is with the parent, following them or watching them in another vehicle.
It's a great idea, Helen. And we've had Tim Hollister on our program before, and something that we can go to WNPR.org. We'll make more links available throughout the course of the day on the show. You were nodding your head, Dr. Campbell, as she was talking about this particular instance.
Right. Tim Hollister is a good friend of mine, and I want to just reiterate the value of his book. If you're a parent and you want to do one thing to make your teenager a safer driver, I would recommend buying a copy of Tim's book, reading it, and adhering to the advice that he provides.
Now, Representative Camillo, as we talk both about kids and driving and also distracted driving, I understand that back in 2008, you were struck by a distracted driver. What happened to you?
Yeah, I I was driving on the Boston Post Road in the Coscop section of Greenwich, and I was struck pretty hard by a girl behind me. And I looked up, because you're in shock, and it was a jolt. And unfortunately, my dog was way in the back. It was a small little SUV, ended up crashing against the dashboard. That's how far he came.
Oh.
Luckily, he was okay. I was fine. But she clearly was very distracted, and immediately I saw the cell phone. And for some reason, as luck would have it, her dad was not that far away. So we pulled over. The officer came, and she wasn't charged with anything, but he was there immediately. Within, I would say, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, the father was there. So, there's no way of proving this stuff. Unless, again, they subpoena the phone. In that case, it really wasn't a catastrophic accident. No one died. No one was had any long-term injuries. So the stats are always going to be incomplete as long as you cannot subpoena those phones. But, again, just by putting these laws in place and having the word get out there, and then, unfortunately, having some people lose their license or get 5 points off their license, like in New York. Once the word spreads to that, then it's going to start to sink in a little bit. And 20 years from now, you'll see less of this, but you will still see people pull over, as you know, we as was referenced before with the driving while intoxicated arrest.
There are a few things that the people have been tweeting us about or sending us messages about over the course of the last few days, Representative Camillo, that I just wanted to ask you about. One has to do with a tweet came in from Mark and another one from David talking about cities and towns lowering road speeds to 20 miles an hour to save lives. Some roads in New Canaan dropped from 30 to 25. Do you think that that's a role that state or local government can play to try to make our roads safer?
Well, you know, that's a local question. When every year, some of the homeowners associations have local law enforcement come and speak at events that I'm speaking at, and a lot of the time people are saying, well, "Can you put speed bumps on our street?" And it comes, and the fire professional will jump in and say, "They don't want them." And so, and even though most people say, "Well, it would slow cars down," it slows down also. Having speed bumps, it slows down fire engines and their response time. So it looks like it may be a perfect answer in lowering it to 20 miles an hour. May not be. I don't know. I don't think there's much appetite for lowering the speed limits to 20 miles an hour. I would hope people, whatever the speed limit is, it's just enforcing what's there. I can tell you on a lot of roads in the town I live at, people don't adhere to it. And when there's a police officer, they get pulled over and they get tickets. But it's impractical. It's impossible to have a police officer on every street corner and every intersection. So you're always going to have, scofflaws and people, paying attention to it.
Well, and I'll just ask you one last question
sure.
from a representative standpoint here before we have to take our break. Something else we've been getting a lot of information coming in from people about is they're worried about these electronic billboards by the side of the roads, the one that flash all sorts of different messages constantly. I will tell you, I sat down with Governor Jody Rell several years ago, maybe in her last year in the governor's office, and she said that was one of the biggest issues in her mind in Connecticut. Is there anything that the state government may do to crack down on that type of distraction? Because, yeah, we want to get cell phones out of people's hands right in front of their eyes, but there's an awful lot of distractions that seem to be along the side of our highways that just continue.
Yeah, well, that's another interesting point. In our town, we only have a few of those. And law enforcement officers have told me they do work. You know, you're going 47 miles an hour and it's flashing and people do stop. But as soon as you take that away and put it in another, the increased speed picks up again. So that's not an answer, because you can't. It's only a temporary answer. As far as that being a distraction, I don't know. I've never heard that complaint. I'm sure there's a lot of distractions, and distracted driving doesn't only have to be, as we've heard before, the use of a cell phone. Just looking at the radio and turning the radio dial is a form of distraction. So, You're never going to 100% again eliminate things on the side of the road that are distracting. What I think is as absurd is you see sometimes in cars on the dashboard you'll see video players in the front, which I would hope that car manufacturers get together and somehow have a way to not have those installed in and to prevent them from being installed in cars, because I have seen it before, and it's shocking.
Well, I'll say it's one of the things, in our caller, Adam, earlier, maybe the question is whether or not it's the cell phone industry, whether or not it's the automobile industry, whether or not there's some responsibility on their parts as well for all this. I want to thank Representative Fred Camillo from Greenwich. He's a Republican. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Now, when we come back, we're going to be talking more about some of these issues. We're also going to be talking with Lieutenant Paul Vance of the State Police to find out what the state is doing to make the roads safer during these holiday periods. We're going to take more of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. This is where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, in 2005, neuroscientist James Fallon was looking at brain scans of serial killers, and when he looked at a scan of his own brain, he was disturbed to find a lot of similarities. His book is called The Psychopath Inside, A Neuroscientist's Personal Journey into the Dark Side of the Brain. We'll find out what he maybe has taken away from some of the reports about Newtown shooter Adam Lanza. Also, can philanthropy help erase a controversial past? We'll look into a story about Yale University, asbestos, and the long arm of Italian law. Those are some of the stories we'll be telling you tomorrow on Where We Live. Today we're talking about safety on our roads and highways. We're talking about teen drivers, and we're talking about distracted driving. You can join us at 860-275-7266. Joining us in studio is Dr. Brendan Campbell. He's medical director of the Pediatric Trauma and Injury Prevention Center at Connecticut Children's Medical Center. We want to go to quickly to Dave in Oxford. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Good morning, John. How are you today?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm a volunteer. I'm a longstanding member of the BMW CCA, Car Club of America.
Mm-hmm.
And they run a, they volunteer along with the Tire Rack company, and they do a street survival school for teens. And there are many programs like this across the country, and I highly recommend them to any parent who has a teen driver.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, you recently mentioned Tim Hollister's book. Tim was at our last driver school, and he spoke to the teens as well.
You know what I do, Dave, is if you could email us, wherewelive@wnpr.org, with any links that you think would be appropriate, we'll make sure to put them up on our website, all right?
You betcha.
Hey, Dave, thank you so much for the phone call. I really appreciate it. And I want to get next to Lieutenant Paul Vance from the State Police in Connecticut. He joins us on the phone for a couple minutes. Lieutenant, good to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning, John.
Before we get to some of the driving statistics over these past holiday weekends, we heard from one of your compatriots in New York State what they're doing to crack down on distracted driving. What's Connecticut doing from the state police trooper angle?
Well, that's a great question. And interestingly enough, we have begun to receive some new vehicles. And similarly to what New York is doing, we are doing here in Connecticut. Very soon you will see SUVs as part of our fleet and on our highways and roads in Connecticut. And they put you a little bit elevated above a passenger vehicle, and you can see a little bit better into cars. And that certainly is going to help our effort. But you know what we're also trying to do, John, is we're trying to educate the public that this problem of distracted driving crosses all socioeconomic, all ages, you name it, it's everybody. It's not just teens. It's not just adults. It's everyone. And it's an issue that we are addressing. And, you know, the fines are outrageous. I'll be the first to admit it, but people using any kind of electronic device while they're operating a vehicle anywhere in Connecticut is not only endangering themselves, but they're endangering those other people, the families, the people that deserve to be safe on our roads here in Connecticut.
When you say the fines are outrageous, what do you mean?
Well, they're expensive, and certainly if you're chit-chatting on the phone about you know what you're doing that afternoon or that next day or what have you, and you're observed by a law enforcement officer, you're gonna get a ticket. I mean, there's no excuse for that. If someone really needs to make a call, pull over to the side in a safe location in a parking lot or what have you, and complete that call, and then go about your business of driving on. It just simply stated there is no call that is so important. As a matter of fact, we recommend shut your phone off, turn the phone off while you're in the car. there is no need for it to be on. If you have an emergency and you need to call 911 to get help, you can turn the phone on and do it, but it's certainly one way to prevent a call from even coming in.
And just to be clear, do your troopers have very clear guidelines about what it takes to pull somebody over? I mean, do you have to see them texting? Do you have to see them with a cell phone to their ear? Can you be specific about what troopers are looking for people not to do or to do?
All of the above, and you just stated it very well. I mean, any kind of electronic device in your hand, we've stopped people where they say, well, I've got it on speakerphone. I'm not holding it to my ear. That's not what it says. It says totally hands-free. If you have a hands-free device in your car, that's fine. That's acceptable by law. But if you have it in your hand and you're utilizing it in any fashion, near your ear, near your mouth, or what have you, or you're trying to text, that simply stated, that's almost like being a drunk driver on our roads. I've unfortunately had to issue tickets, and I've seen people that simply can't maintain a lane because they're trying to drive a car and they're trying to text or trying to talk, and they're attention is distracted.
Well,
it's dangerous.
And Dr. Campbell, you mentioned this earlier, though. Just to be clear, when we're talking about science versus law, what you said earlier is the distraction comes from the talking on the phone. It doesn't necessarily come from having something up to your ear. What you're essentially saying is you would like to go a little further than law enforcement perhaps is able to.
Well, absolutely. You know, just because you're using hands-free doesn't mean you're not increasing your risk of being involved in a crash. You most certainly are.
Lieutenant Vance, I just want to ask you about how safe our roads are over these long holiday weekends. We got some initial statistics from you folks about Thanksgiving, and it looked as though we had a very safe Thanksgiving period. And then final statistics came out a couple days later, and it showed quite a few more accidents and arrests and that sort of thing. I guess, first of all, can you tell us over the Thanksgiving holiday, the Christmas and New Year's holiday, have we been safer? Have we cut down on the number of accidents, drunk driving, that sort of thing?
We absolutely have, and you know, there's a couple of factors that we always got to look at when we look at statistics, and that is one major one is weather conditions. When you're comparing year to year, you got to ensure that we're on the same level playing field. But overall, the 2013 holidays, major holidays into 2014, we saw a significant decrease, and I think that it's certainly the work of your radio program, Dr. Campbell, all the people that are contributing to enhancing highway safety. And it's a team effort, and that's the only best way I can put it. We talk about parenting, parents and teens, educating them, making sure that they understand why it's distracted driving is dangerous. And Dr. Campbell just stated it perfectly. When you're driving a vehicle and you're talking on the phone, even legally with a hands-free device, your attention is divided between operating that vehicle and that conversation. And for many of us, that's dangerous in and of itself. We'd rather people focus 100% on driving that vehicle safely.
I'm going to go to Randy in Plainville. And Randy, we're running low on time. Go ahead.
Hey, my big question is in a nutshell right here. What is so darn important that we have to talk on our phones, text, or be distracted? I'm a truck driver, have two kids. What is so important that we have to talk on that phone? Why can't we teach our kids, look, call before you leave, call when you get to where you're going. That's it. That's how we grew up.
Well,
we had beepers. We didn't have phones. We don't talk.
Well, I'd say you had beepers. I mean, a lot of people in our listening audience, and thank you very much, Randy, didn't have beepers growing up either. And, you know, when I was talking earlier to the representative doctor about this, about whether or not, you know, the cell phone carriers could make your phone inactive if you're moving, he said, well, one of the problems is that then a passenger couldn't use it. And I guess I remember growing up, you know, you got a phone call at home, or you made a phone call at home. You didn't get anything in the car at all.
Well, we all remember that, those who are our age. But I think the thing that you have to realize is that these new technologies are here, and they're here to stay. And I think our job as public health professionals and stakeholders on this issue of distracted driving, we just have to come up with the most effective ways we can to lower the risk of being killed or injured on the roads.
And I will say, I use a hands-free device to make phone calls on a regular basis in my car. It's the sort of thing that, having talked to Dr. Campbell, I need to think more clearly about. Thank you very much for your time, Doctor. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, John.
Dr. Brendan Campbell is Medical Director of the Pediatric Trauma and Injury Prevention Center at Connecticut Children's Medical Center. I also want to thank Lieutenant Paul Vance from the Connecticut State Police. Thank you so much, Lieutenant. Good to hear from you.
Thanks for the job you're doing, John. Appreciate it.
And if you want to continue this conversation online, go to WNPR.org. You'll find all sorts of information that we talked about today. Our program is produced by Tucker Ives and Lydia Brown. The executive producer of Where We Live is Katie Tolarski. I'm John Dankosky. Drive safely. This is Where We Live.